All right, welcome back to the second hour of the Simmons Car Care Shop Talk Show, right here on ESPNTucson.com, 1490 AM, 94.9 HD4 FM. I'm Jerry Simmons, your host, along with me, my good buddy from Frontier Towing, Mr. Jim Mooney, for all of your towing needs. Been there, towed that. Morning again, Jim. You get your tee filled up?
I did. I got my tee filled up. I'm good to go again. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for listening. Welcome, everybody, out there in cyberspace. Remember, live call in. If you wrote down on your redneck Palm Pilot all the questions, 520-719-1490. Now, I don't know exactly what Jerry refers to as a redneck Palm Pilot. I use my palm and write my notes on the palm of my hand. So I assume that's what he meant by redneck Palm Pilot, the palm of your hand.
Nope. I'm talking about a little 3x5 spiral notebook. It opens from the bottom or on the side or the top. I have had these things. I bet you I should have bought stock in the manufacturer of this. That's how long I've been using them. I've had cell phones after cell phones after cell phones after cell phones after cell phones. The battery go dead. You go in, you try to find out what you were supposed to be doing. You've got no reference. And I found out that if you write it down, and you've heard the expression, the smart ones will write it down. That is not old. Smart ones will write it down. And they say, yeah, Jerry, but you got to get up on technology. I've got a smartphone that has a place in there where you can write down to-do list. I write it down on my redneck Palm Pilot, stick it in my shirt pocket or in a pocket up top where it's easily accessed, and I pull it out. I don't have a problem remembering where to go. I have a problem sometimes of remembering to read my own notes, but yeah, that goes along with just a lot of things to do. That's just like Jim's getting ready to tell you the do's and don'ts when you're working in a rainstorm.
That's right. It's a so anyway. If you use the Jim Mooney front Palm Pilot, the redneck Palm Pilot, it's right on the palm of your hand. Works until you washes your hand, and then it's gone. So. You know, make sure you transfer that down someplace else. So,
it's kind of like a dead battery in a cell phone.
That's right. That's right. It has a short lifespan. So.
Okay, I win.
Jerry got me on that one. So, all right. So, I'm on the radio again with Jerry. You know, it's very nice being on the radio with Jerry. He allows me to come on with him, and I really appreciate it. You know, thank you very much, Jerry, for allowing me to share this time with you, because I, you know, otherwise I wouldn't get this opportunity. It is truly a really fun experience. So, but it's since I get to be here, I get to dictate that it's Super Safe Saturday. And you're like, oh, great, Super Safe Saturday again. That's right, folks. It's out there. It's Super Safe Saturday. That means slow down, move over. If you see a car with flashing lights, no drinking and driving, no texting and driving. Particularly hard in the rain. That means you need to really pay attention. Oh, yes, that's right. Turn on your headlights before you leave the driveway. If your lights don't come on automatically, turn them on. If you think they come on automatically and they don't, turn them on. They do have manual switches for that. If you turn on your headlights and they don't come on, well, don't go. I know that sounds crazy. Don't drive in the dark without headlights. We see it every day. I can't believe how many times people drive down the road with their lights off. I was driving by one last night. I'm in car pitch black, not a running light, not a daytime running light, nothing. And it was a dark charcoal gray car, and it was black. And the only reason I could see it is because the street light kind of glimmered off of it. And I'm sitting there thinking, does this person not even know that the lights have to get turned on? How do you see your instruments if the lights aren't on? If the lights aren't on, I can't see the cluster's dead. So turn your lights on, especially today in the rain and the snow and everything that's going to be out there. If you're driving in the rain, pay special attention to the dog walkers if they're out there today. Yeah, you're braver than me. If you're a bicyclist and you're totally dedicated and you're out there riding around, watch out for those guys, because that can be a tough one. So if you're working on your car in the rain, you are gutsier than me, folks. You're way gutsier than me. You're going to stay out of the driveway and work on your car. Bless your heart. So, again, rain gear. Put on some rain gear because you don't want to get all wet and mucky. I don't know how to do it in a driveway other than, you know, I would say lay down some cardboard, but that would be pretty pointless. I guess build yourself a dock or something so you can lay on it if you got to lay under your car. But if you do decide to get into the car and you're going to jack it up, put your jack stands down. They work rain, snow, or shine. They still work. Put your chocks down because that's really helpful in the slick rain. Put your hood prop up. And maybe you can use that as your umbrella. Because if you're going to lay under the hood, maybe you won't get rained on. Doesn't work.
Yeah, but you don't want to be playing with spark plugs and electrical ignition systems with your hind end hanging out in a rainstorm.
Excellent point. You know, in the rain, you shouldn't be working on the electrical system. You know, just saying, you should not be doing voltage coil tests while in the rain. That's probably a really good safety tip, Jerry. No working on high voltage electrical in the rain. Maybe leave that for another day. If the car won't run because the coil's bad and you're trying to test the coil, yeah, find a dry place or wait a day. It'll be dry tomorrow, hopefully.
That's the best thing. Just wait a day.
Wait a day. That's right.
Because nothing's going to go right.
Nothing is going to, yeah. Yeah. Oh, and it's classic because, I'm just going to open the hood real quick. I'm going to tear it apart real quick. It's going to take me 10 minutes. Folks, just let me tell you when you get done with it and go, that didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. That's what happens when you're working in the rain.
That's right.
I should have thought that through just a little bit more. So,
well, let's take something simple. Something simple that you can work on during the rain that you may have to. And it's called a windshield wiper blade.
That's right.
If you think on a perfect dry day, you can go out. And it's not that hot right now, and you pop your little holders up, and you just go in there, and you just pull them off, and pull the other one out of the kid-proof wrapper, and put it on there, and then you close them all back down, and you're done. You can do a couple of them in less than 5 minutes, a couple of them. Now let's add rain to this. That five-minute job, people, has already turned into a drenching of about a 15-minute minimum just to get the blades off, get them changed out, and just get them going. So, you know, the way you shortcut this thing is when you buy the wiper blades down at Merle's, the one of Merle's 10 locations in Tucson, you get, you know, sometimes they've got people in there that'll go out and change your wiper blades. If you have that option, use it. I know some stores that will change your wiper blades. And so I let them change them. Because, one, if you're driving a 3/4 ton, you've got to be about 6'9" to reach the wiper blades. Not everybody drives these little cars that you can just reach up there or reach across. You don't even have to reach up. You just reach across, and you can change them out. But it seems like that over the time that I've been changing wiper blades on vehicles, they've changed the mounting brackets, the way the rubber actually separates and slides in on a little old metal rail and all sorts of stuff. So if you don't know what you're doing, find some place when you buy your wiper blades that'll change them out. You know, like wherever you're local, or if you go to Merle's, you know, ask them, do you actually change them in some of the smaller stores that they have around Tucson? Some of them, I know the other people do. And so that's what you want to do. Don't buy the cheapest wiper blades. I know they're cheap, cheap, but don't buy the cheapest ones. Get a quality. You're going to pay for a set of them. You can pay up to $56 for a quality set of wiper blades, easy. Unless you're buying a motorhome, then you can pay $300 for them. But you get the ones that you can do. But figure the elements. I agree with Jim. A moratorium on working on cars like today. When I started this program over an hour ago, it wasn't a drop of rain outside, and now it's just coming in and making up for it. So it's a full rain. It looks like it's covered all over Tucson. So, you know, today might be one of those days to where you just declare a moratorium on working on your car outside. And by the way, you can use a potato, a raw potato, cut it in half, and clean your windshield with it, and it will actually repel water like Rain-X.
Good
advice. Done it. Had to do it.
I don't know where you buy cheap wiper blades today, because every wiper blade I ever bought currently is $20. So they're expensive no matter what you do.
That's a piece.
$20 a piece. Yes.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to put them on, you know, and it's pouring rain, and you know you're going to stand there in front of the auto parts store, you know, the rubber broke off, and the guy goes, "Have fun with that," you know, because he's like, "Yeah, I want to help you, but I'm not going out there, so I don't want to help you that much."
They don't want to get out in the rain either.
Right. So the trick being that if you put them on, make sure you get them on all the way and they snap into place.
Absolutely.
There's nothing more frustrating to have that thing going down the road and the windshield where everybody goes singing off down the side, and now it's just the metal on your window. The little arm is on your window because you didn't get it on right.
That's right.
The thought it was on? No go. Well, it looks like it's on.
True story.
Right.
True story. Going through Texas on Interstate 10, I put a set of wiper blades on before I left. I get down to see going through Texas. This is a few years ago. I've learned a few things since then, like lock them in, make sure they're on. And it come off on a freeway at about 65 mile an hour on the freeway on I-10 with traffic. You can't see anything when it's pouring rain and the wiper blades come off. And I slid over and I was looking out on the right side trying to drive this thing. And I thought, okay, as soon as I find a road where I can turn around, I'm going to go back and see if I can find that wiper blade. I did. Nobody had run over the wiper blade. It was off the side of the road. I must have drove 15 miles before I could get a turnaround. So when Jim says make sure it snaps on, he is not lying, because that son of a gun will come off and it just doesn't care where it comes off. It wants to inconvenience you the most it possibly can when it comes off. And it did a good job. But I took that off my bucket list. Now when I put him on there, I try to pull him off. I put him on till they snap and then I try to pull him off.
Right.
So, you know, just that's good point there, bud.
Important safety tip. It's happened to me. I've done it. I've put them on, thinking, oh, they're on. And especially, if you're trying to do it in the rain, they're even more fun because, well, you know, you're in a hurry, and you go to put them on. They don't. You think they click in there? Of course, you've got these ones now that look like they come off a spaceship, right? I mean, I'm used to the old school ones that said, you know, what was it, Trico on them? They were Trico wiper blades.
Yep.
And they're metal. Yep. And you know, they got the two little holders on each end and the wiper blade, right?
You slide them in.
I don't even think they make them anymore. I don't even think they make those anymore. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Jim, you're dating us. You're dating us. Okay.
You're right. Today you got these ones.
Yeah.
They're an inch wide. The plastic is an inch wide. Okay. It bends in several places. I mean, it does the same thing. It it pushed the wiper blade on the window. But it's, you know, this big conglomeration of plastic, and, you know, you're trying to see that where it locks in, and you can't see. And it's got a little, some of them got a little flip-up lever. You got to flip up the top of it so you can get them in there. But
oh, yeah.
I'm going to tell you, if you don't get that, if you don't see what you're doing and in the rain and you're trying to do it in a hurry and you can't get that thing on, she falls right off. Been there, done that, just like Jerry. I didn't do it on I-10, nor would I have went back to find mine. At 15 miles, I would have just kept driving. I would have off the side of the road. Because that thing comes off, and now the...
You couldn't see.
You can't see.
That was the longest 15 miles I've ever driven in my life. Looking out of the right side of the car with a passenger sitting there going, I can't believe you didn't put that thing on the way it's supposed to. That was worse than the driving without the darn wiper blade. But no. see what we're trying to do. See what we're trying to tell you. There's not a whole bunch that you can do to your car or your truck that we, only because I'm older than most of you, haven't already done. You want to blow up a motor? How many motors you want to blow up? I can tell you exactly what it feels like at 7,000 RPM. You know, I can tell you the difference between synthetic motor oil and regular paraffin-based oil. I can tell you when there's carbon on the engines without having to put a scope inside the cylinder, just by the way it sounds. Because I are a senior citizen who has been around the automotive industry this year at Simmons Automotive 50 years. I'm not a spring chicken. Sometimes I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I love cars. I have put car fires out on a Mustang on I-10 here in Tucson off a Houghton Road with my coveralls. They were off my body. I'm standing there in a pair of boxer shorts, and people coming across the road carrying fire extinguishers laughing their butt off. I said, I don't care. I don't know any of these people anyway. When I, you know, take a fire extinguisher. How many people actually carry a fire extinguisher in your car? How many of them carry a fire extinguisher that will handle any kind of fire in your car? Just a small one. And how many of you know how to use them? I've seen stuff at the lakes where boats and stuff are sitting there smoking, and the guy had a fire extinguisher in his hand, didn't even know how to pull the trigger. Didn't know that you had a little release you had to pull out, pull out, and then you pull the trigger, and then the fire extinguisher worked. Halon. I remember when Halon first come out. That's a spray or a propellant that they have inside of a fire extinguisher that kills the oxygen. And Halon would come out, and that's one of the cooler ones that I've seen. But how many people actually carry them? How many of you carry them in there? Assuming, and if it hadn't been for those people running across the freeway laughing at me carrying fire extinguisher, that Mustang wouldn't have been nothing left. And by the way, that was a 70 Mustang with a fastback before they were real popular. And like an idiot, I turned it over to the insurance company, and I let them pay me almost nothing for it. And but that's one of those been there, done that. That's what qualifies. And but it's things happen. But you need to be prepared if you're going to play. if you're going to make mistakes, which you will. So get over it. You will make mistakes. But the thing is, you learn from your mistakes. You know, you don't sit there and beat yourself up with it. Because one thing, can you change history? I mean, you know, I had a gas leak on a carburetor on my Mustang. You burn it, it caused me to get rid of it. Could I change history? No, it's already burnt the darn car. Can't change history. What you can do is you try to prevent it from happening. And there is a thing, it's called the six things. Proper preparation prevents piss poor performance. Six P's.
And if you'll look at that, and you can't do anything on a car without a plan. I don't care how good you are. You got to have a plan before you start. I just can't say it enough. I've already said it enough this morning. It's raining out there. Don't get out there. In fact, it's covered in pretty good right now. So we're going to have some rain days, supposed to. That's great. It's 100% chance of rain. Oil changes. I noticed by reading again and researching that we're still not changing any oil. I think you got to be kidding me. Everybody and their brother knows how to change an oil and what the requirements are on your vehicle. Change the oil. You know, and in Tucson, Arizona, if you've been listening to this show, and I've been on 36 years, I think, 35, 36 years, and I'm here to tell you, change the oil. Change the oil. If you don't know when the intervals are, ask somebody. Call your favorite shop and ask them, okay, when the oil change is due. We've gotten so spoiled by electronic smartphones and all this stuff. And, yeah, you could put it in your thing and, you know, put a little date on it, you know, where it comes up. This is an appointment. I've got to take my car into Simmons, and I'm going to have an oil change in it and have it serviced and have a carbon tended to. Carbon right now seems to be one of the big things that people are omitting. It's right up there with the changing the oil. But changing the oil, you do it anywhere between 5, and they recommend between 5 and 15,000 miles. No. It's oil. And Tucson, Arizona is extreme climate. It has everything but extreme cold and extreme wet. And we're shooting both of it in the butt this week, you know, and last week. So you have extreme conditions in Tucson. We do have massive heat. And you use the severe duty in your owner's manual. Go to severe duty on it, find out what you're supposed to do, and then treat it like that. And you say, well, that seems like a lot of waste of money. Uh-uh. It's quite evident that you haven't had the privilege of going after a part that's supposed to be lubed, and the lube didn't work. So now you've got a little problem, like a differential about $3,000. How about an engine anywhere from $4,500 to $18,000? How about a transmission? Transmission go anywhere from, I don't know, you do a cheaper rebuild on maybe a little two-speed Chevy for around $1,200, and then you go up to maybe you have to buy a case or something like that, and there you're back up into $3,000, $4,000 for transmission, and that's cheap because you've got to pull it. That's R&R. They're put in there where you got to be a little guy, and you got to have a bunch of specialty tools, and you got to have a bunch of jacks, lifts, all this stuff just get these transmissions out of them. I went in, and they're doing a tune-up on a Chevy GM or something like that. I walked through, and I said, hey, you replacing the motor, huh? He said, nope, changing spark plugs. I'm going, what? So about time you think you've seen it all, they come back. And I said, what'd they do? They built the engine, then built the car around the engine, the only thing I can figure. But all of it goes with a tongue in cheek. You can't work on it unless you have a plan. You absolutely cannot change history. Once you do it, you screw it up, it's history. Don't waste time whining about it. Just go ahead and say, whoops, and go on. Because you're going to do is create a lot of aggravation for yourself. So, got anything you want to pour out on that, Jim?
No, you're absolutely right. You cannot change the history. I can tell you, as far as engine vehicle fires, I've set my fair share on fire. I've blown up my fair share of motors. If you start a motor and it sounds like it's knocking, revving it up to try and make it better is not a good idea. I mean, it's a good idea to blow up the motor, but not a good idea to fix it. So, you know, if it's knocking like a lot of noise, probably should shut it off. So I watched a guy do it one day. You know, it was knocking hard, and he revved it up, and it went, uh-huh. It went rev, 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 and then it just went clunk, and that was it. nothing more. Everything was locked up tight as a drum.
That is the longest 6-second ride I've ever had in my life, blowing one up at 7,000 RPM on a racetrack. That is, it seems like you're in there for half an hour waiting on this thing to settle down. Bells and whistles going off, lights flickering, parts bouncing off the inside of the firewall. But so anyway, for people who drive cars, that when you first fire them up in the morning, they go clack, 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 and then it goes away. Okay. That clack, 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 clack is not normal. Okay. You can do a couple of things. One, I want you to get out and I want you to check the oil level in the engine in the crankcase. Check that first. I want you to pull the stick up to your nose and sniff it and see if the oil on the stick smells like it's burnt. Okay, because somewhere there's been an issue that we overlooked. And then if you want to drive it in or you want to call Frontier and have it picked up and towed into a shop, which if you like the vehicle, that's the way I would do it, because you may have enough parts left in the motor where it can be rebuilt, and that'll save you some money. That'll save you some money if you use a good builder on it. The only place it'll save you money is for the engine itself, because you're going to be working against a time factor. Because if you pull a motor, send it to a machine shop, you got about 2 weeks before that engine is going to be rebuilt the way it's supposed to be and get it back and get it installed again. Because somebody's got to pull it, send it over to a machine shop. We use Gary's machine. Send it over to him. Let them rebuild it. Then you pick it up. You bring it back. You put it in. But keep in mind, that engine does not blow up at an opportune time for a machine shop. They're not sitting there waiting on Simmons to bring his motor to them. So you have to make a schedule to get it into Simmons to get it out, a schedule to get the motor into Gary's to have it rebuilt. And then it's on him when he gets done with it, depending on what he finds on the inside of that motor, because he doesn't have X-ray vision. It comes back, and you have it. Then you reinstall it. But after we put them in, then we hook up all the analyzers and stuff that tell us the condition of the engine, the verifying that everything in that is working exactly the way it was supposed to when you when the engine's new. Because theoretically, that engine should be a good rebuild. Don't pull it apart and do it halfway. Do it like you're supposed to. The other thing that I want you to caution you on is cylinder heads, valves and cylinder heads. People say, oh, yeah, well, he's got a burnt valve here. Okay, it's burnt. It's burnt from the inside out. It don't burn from the outside in, but you'd think it burns from the inside out. All right, it's burnt. Now, that means that the cylinder itself has lost compression. That's the reason you say I got to do a valve job. Well, you got 120,000 miles on the engine itself. Now you're going to take something that's probably had a burnt valve and lowering pistons performance. Piston performance because of the compression. The compression is lower in one cylinder. The rings, compression rings in this cylinder now, haven't been having to operate the way they would with new valves. In other words, they don't, so they round off the side of the rings themselves. Well, you go in and you put a brand new set of heads on this thing with the valves all done and everything's all pretty and everything's up to date and life is good. And you put it together and you fire that thing up and say, oh, Simmons was wrong. It runs absolutely perfect. That's what my brother said. And then he called me back in 30 days and he said, oh, you're an apology. I said, no, no, no. It's worth it just to know that you got burnt by not listening. after calling me from across the country. Took out his rings because the rings had already reset and rounded off. And yeah, when you first fire it off, oh yeah, well we're going to adjust. No, you're not, because you've already worn off the part that it's going to visit immediately, and it's going to wear out, and then it's going to smoke like a freight train. It's going to look like you're spraying mosquitoes for the city of Tucson. Do not do a set of valves on an engine that's got like 120,000 miles, over 100,000 on the old oil. If you have synthetic oil in it, you have a professional check it. They can mic the cylinders and see what kind of ring ridge you have at the top of the cylinders. They can check the webbing on the inside of the cylinders. Have a professional look at it before you say, okay, I'm just going to do the cylinder heads. No, you're going to look at the other one, and you can just tell them, no, Simmons said, let me look at this, or get somebody to look at it. That would be your best thing. I don't want the credit for it. I don't want you having to go and do the job twice, because there's nothing inexpensive about the job that you're going to undertake. Okay, most of the work done on the engine is they pull it out of the car, because that's where they got everything. And if you've been inside of a garage and looked at some of the cars and the engines when they pull them out, you look back at it and said, it's a miracle that a technician can pull that engine out and put it back and hook everything back up. I mean, it's just amazing. So, no, you take care, get that carbon off of these engines. I don't care what kind of car. The only thing we don't have carbon in is electric motor. The rest of the stuff has carbon. It is a byproduct. It is in every motor, more so now on a gas direct injected than it is on a regular port injection. You know, one that just puts it back in the back of the valve and lets it clean out and all of this, and everything's good. It allows it to burn loose, but you still have carbon buildup in there, and it needs to be gotten out of there while it's soft carbon and not hard carbon. Soft carbon's when you fire it up in the morning and you think, little roughness here. What happens is the amount of fuel that you're putting inside the cylinder has to soak in. The soft carbon is soaking it up like a sponge. When the sponge gets its fill of the gasoline going in, okay, now I'll give you enough to where you can start this engine up. There's enough left over now, so I'll share. And then it'll fire off. That's your little signal that you've got soft carbon. What happens to soft carbon if it's not gotten out? It will absolutely turn into concrete sitting on top of your pistons. What it does is changes the compression ratio inside the cylinder when it builds up that much, because it don't take much to build compression. But it'll change the compression inside the cylinder. Well, not all cylinders carbon up the same. So I've got one cylinder that's running 110 pounds. I got one cylinder running 150 or 140. That gives an imbalance to the engine. An engine is a balanced assembly. It doesn't like imbalances, okay? So it's going to give you some premature wear out of the engine. So when you're dancing with the devil on this, it's okay to do it if you think you can do it yourself. Go get you a good owner's manual. Get you a repair manual for that particular vehicle. And then you can spend some time sitting on the bucket reading the repair manual, and then you can go do a little bit more. And one of the big mistakes that I've seen do-it-yourselfers make, I know because I was one, and when you're getting ready to work on something, you say, oh, okay, well, Merle's has this part in stock, so I'm okay. No. No. Jim will tell you, you get the part, then you put it in. You don't take it. You don't down the vehicle while it's running. If the part, if you think it'll run another day or something like that, and you're using it for commercial purposes, you go get the part that you need, and then you down it, and you make sure you got the right part, because that'll screw up your schedule. Oh, more than anything I've ever seen in my life. So anyway, that's what you're going to be doing on that.
You know, that's really good, Jerry, because it's inevitable. You'll go get the, this is the part that I love. You'll go diagnose the vehicle, and you're like, okay, I need this. And you tear it all apart, and then now you got to figure out how to go get the part. So you got to get another vehicle or get it delivered or something, right? So at any rate, time passes. Maybe it's an hour, maybe it's a day. Now you go to go put the new part in. And what's the very first thing on the front of the box? You open up the box, and there's a big note in there. Hi, this part does not look like your old part, but it will interchange 100%. Awesome. I don't remember what it looked like when I took it out. Well, now you get to try and match this stuff up and go, oh, I guess it goes like this. Or maybe I got it upside down. So if you have that in hand and you read that direction, you can, before you take your old part out, you can go, oh, I see how this works. Very, really important tip, because you can spend 3 hours trying to figure out how the new part goes in, because the old part's sitting there and you're trying to figure out how it was, and you don't remember exactly because, well, we can't even remember when we changed our oil. So,
right.
Just saying. And if you want to take on the daunting task of replacing a motor in your vehicle, not that it's terribly hard to do, but it can be challenging. Make sure you remember or write down everything that you did. I had a guy who put a remanufactured 300 six-cylinder in a Ford truck. And it was a really nice remanufactured motor, okay? Put it in, fired it up, it ran for 30 seconds and then shut off. 30 seconds, couldn't figure out what was going. Oil was perfect in it, everything was great, you know, couldn't figure it out, wouldn't start. So I'm like, well, what did you do? Well, I replaced the motor. Well, tell me exactly what you did. Went through the whole process. He forgot to install the oil pump drive tool or drive rod from the distributor.
Oh, my gosh.
And on an old Ford, like a lot of cars, gas-powered cars, at that time the distributor actually drove the oil pump. So the camshaft turned the distributor. Distributor drove the oil pump. There's a little rod, looks like a I-16's hex or a rod, looks like a big extension, right? It's about 6 inches long or 8 inches long. Put an oil pump, put on top of your distributor. Then you turn it so that's because you got to force that gear down to get her just right so she's timed, and voila, did do it. Smoked the motor. No, it wasn't warranted because he forgot to put that in. So when you're going to do these daunting tasks, take your photos. Write it down. Get out Jerry's redneck Palm Pilot. Write down that that when you pull the distributor, or you know, if you're working on a late model motor and it's distributor ignition or you know computer control, make sure that you have all the stuff on that needs to be on. I mean, I would equate it to if you're going to change a motor in a front wheel drive car, and you didn't get you're going to put the water pump in after you put the motor in. Yeah, guess again, folks. That's like the worst thing on the planet. Put that puppy in before you put it in there. Or the AC compressor. Let's get that on before I put the motor in. There ain't anything more fun than trying to put that in there. And oh, by the way, you know, there's reasons for doing everything. So you put all this stuff on and you're shoehorning that motor in there, right? You know, and maybe it's just a little V6 and it's in a transverse situation, right? So you're trying to hold it in there, trying to get it lined up with the, you know, trying to get it lined up so that you can get the pins on the transaxle lined up with the motor. You know, so you get them in there, and you're banging it around, you're banging it around, you're banging it around. And unbeknownst to you, but known to the rest of the car, you bend the AC pulley, and you don't see it. You know what's going to happen? In about, I don't know, 2 days, you're going to be putting a belt on it. And you're going, huh, that's strange. I wonder why the belt went bad. I don't know. You're going to put another belt on it. And in 2 days later, you're going to put another belt on. And then you're going to realize that there's a problem. And then you're going to find out that, yes, while trying to do this install, you bent the darn pulley on the AC compressor, and it's cutting the belt off. So all these little things are things to watch out for. Oh, I better go back and check that, because a little dent in a serpentine pulley will slice that belt right off. It slices it off like little, looks like little spaghetti threads. Okay, seen it happen, been there, done it, watched it happen. So just make sure you pay attention to what you're doing, and if you don't know, get somebody to help you, or get somebody who does know. And you know, because like Jerry said, you talk about special tools. Try putting a transmission in a Dodge truck. You know, they got the little torque converter bolts are about they must be about a 16th of an inch thick, literally, and they're like an inch, a 7/8 inch socket, and there's one little access port you can get to them on the passenger side up at the top. You want to talk about the dumbest place to put this together? Well, I forgot. We assembled the motor and transmission out of the vehicle and stuck it in the chassis before we put the body on top, so it was easy for us. Yeah. You want to talk about the dumbest place to put a torque converter bolt access hole? I'm just like, really? And you're reaching up there, and you got to reach at the top of your arms, and I don't care if you have the car 1 foot off the ground or 15 feet off the ground. Your arm, because your head's hitting the oil pan, and you're trying to get your arm up there to get a socket on there. Yeah. So, and there is a special socket for it. Why? Because if you don't have it, you're going to round the freaking nuts off, you're going to round the bolts off, and then you're never getting it out. And you're really upset. So, been there, done that. When Jerry's talking about know what you're doing and get the right tools, amen. You know, I'm going to tell you, there are some tough times, and after you do them once or twice, you're like, hey, I'm a pro at this. I know what to do, because I broke the vacuum pump while trying to unhook the hose off. I broke the little, because the car doesn't build enough vacuum, so we had to put an auxiliary vacuum pump on it. Very common in today's cars. I broke the hose off. Well, that's good for $125, and replaced the vacuum pump, right? Because now the brakes don't work because there's no vacuum to hook it up to. Oh, well, I broke it taking it out. I broke it trying to get the hose off. Oh, the little EGR plate on the back of the motor. Oh, I'm trying to pull the intake off, right? I'm trying to pull the intake manifold off so I can change the spark plug. Oh, and I broke the EGR holder on the back, or I cracked the manifold because I didn't know that there was two bolts behind there, which you can't see. I mean, you can get a mirror back there with the best LED light on the planet, and you can't see it. You got to reach back there and feel for it. Just saying, some of that stuff can be a little daunting. And why do I know? Because I've been there. So
been there, done that.
And to me, it amazes me to no end sometimes when I hear about catalytic converters getting stolen by a guy who slides under a car with a Sawzall and cuts it off and then pulls it out and goes away. And I'm sitting there thinking, man, you know, the fact that he stole the converter is one thing. It just irritates the hell out of you. But, gosh, this guy got it. He slid underneath there and pulled the converter off. Well, I wish he could, you know, if he could just put his skills to being a mechanic, he'd be a rock star. Because nobody I know can slide underneath a car and pull a catalytic. I can't pull a catalytic converter if it's up in the air 6 feet. And with every wrench on the planet, I can't get the thing out. So, man, so to me, I was like, wow, some of these guys, if they tune their skills a little bit, they could be really good mechanics, not just thieves. So, but
they can make a lot of money in a short period of time.
Yeah, they can. Well, they can until the scrap guy goes, sorry, we don't take this no more, and then he's stuck with carrying the catalytic converter in the shopping cart, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
He's saving the environment from his breathing gas. I don't know. But yeah, if when you're doing these kind of things, do a little research. Yeah, I know people don't necessarily buy a Haynes manual anymore or a Chilton's. I don't even know if Chilton's still in business. But there's lots of videos you can watch. Do a little background work first. And you know, not all videos are great, folks. So I was working on an F-150 one day. Oh, it was a little 18. Got a little EcoBoost in it, right? And so every video was, the oil pressure sending unit had failed. So the oil pressure showed at the halfway point the whole time. Turn it on, turn it off. It was at the halfway point. I'm like, well, that's stupid. I go to Ford and I get this new pressure sending unit, right? I think it was $35. Oh, you got to open the hood. You got to pull this off here. You got to pull this compressor off here. You got to do this and do that. And I'm like, wow, that seems like a lot of work to get to that. Well, after I slid underneath and I looked from underneath and, oh, wow, I can get to that in like 2 seconds. It was a lot easier to do. So my point is some videos are okay, but not all of them are the best way. They're just a guy who came up with a way. So you might have a better way.
Yeah.
You can put your video out there.
Right.
So, take information for what it is. Use it to the best you can, and if that looks like a great idea, okay. If it doesn't look like a great idea, try another one.
Hey, Jimbo, Gary.
Yes, sir.
Hey, we got a special guest online.
Okay, bring him on.
Good morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Mr. Test First Don't Guess here.
Yes, it is. How are you doing this morning? Glad you could join us.
Yeah, getting ready to go to work.
Oh, man.
Can't keep me away
you
from
got
that
any,
shop.
Any, yeah. Have you had any problem cars in there that we need to know about?
Well, you know, we're starting to see a lot of these vehicles that they're waiting 10,000 miles to change their oil, and they're having catastrophic failures with timing components, timing chains, timing guides, cam phasers. Seeing a lot more of these vehicles that they're just not changing their oil when they need to, and the outcome is just very, very expensive.
Wow. In other
more
words,
and more.
They'd be better off if they'd use the severe duty intervals.
Well, I tell you, you know, like we always say, oil's cheap, repairs are not. You know, you get into start changing cam phasers and timing components inside of one of these motors, you know, and it's just very, very expensive. The alternative would have been, you know, hey, change your oil a little more often. Don't wait until that thing goes to 100%. You know, get it changed. That's all I can say.
Yep.
I mean, I would not go over 5,000 miles with synthetic oil. In regular paraffin-based oil, I would only go 3,000. I mean, like I say, oil's cheap. The alternative is not.
Well, the synthetics, you know, the 5,000 in Arizona, in Tucson, that's when I changed mine. It's full synthetic. And so far, I hadn't had any problems with it. So, yeah, I agree 100% on that. But people are, you know, synthetic oil. I mean, I found out where you can actually buy AMSOIL. And AMSOIL used to not be available in your Class A stores. Ace Hardware on 22nd Street in Tucson has AMSOIL, a full category of AMSOIL. And AMSOIL I like because it still holds number one rating. But it's just like anything else. You still got to change them. And people will buy the AMSOIL. They won't get an extended oil filter, a heavy-duty oil filter that'll go 10,000 miles. They'll try to get a cheaper one and put it on there. Well, people, if you're going to do that, then in 6 months you got to change your filter.
just go ahead and just change the filter. If you're going to be cheap, go ahead and change them. Actually, if you're going to use a standard oil filter on the thing, change it at 3,000 miles. Just pull it out, pull the oil filter off, put a new one on, and then top off the engine with oil. Okay? And you'll be fine, but you're going to have to do that. It's recommended on at 6 months if you use the good oil filters, and you can go. Can you run extreme oil mileage on them? Yeah, I run a 99 Ford V10, 14,000 miles before changing it. Sent a copy of it. It was on intentional. And I sent a copy, pulled out a sample, sent it to Arizona Laboratories out of Phoenix, and they tested it, sent it back to me and said, okay, for continual use, recheck in 6,000 miles. I'm going, holy cow, that's 14,000 miles on the thing. And but we changed it while it was at the shop anyway, and I just get a little nervous when you're running engine oils and stuff that long, even though the only one that I know will handle it. That was the extended drain intervals from Amsoil Corporation, and it did work. That's a 12-month, 25,000 mile. So, yeah, you can get away with it, but you better know what you're doing, and you can't cheat. You have to, you've got to know what you're doing. So do your research first, then follow the rest of the stuff. Oh, I got a couple of ads. I'm out of time here. Hang on, Brian. Brian, do your ad for me.
For those of you that wonder where Automotive Specialist is, we're in Northwest Tucson at Ina and Meredith. That's one stoplight east of Ina in Thornydale, right behind Checker O'Reilly Auto Parts. It's Automotive Specialist. Our phone number is 572-1734. Address 3611 West Ina Road, Suite 101. Big shop back there, Automotive Specialist. You can also go to our website, which is automotivespecialistaz.com. You can go there. You can schedule an appointment. We just got a new website up, so it's looking real good. And, oh, by the way, we are an AMSOIL dealer now. So if you're looking for AMSOIL, give us a call, and we can help you out with that. Again, our phone number is 572-1734.
Perfect. Thanks, big guy. Thanks. Well, we're running. I got about 3 minutes here. I got to get a couple more ads in on it. So don't you work too hard. Is it raining over there yet?
Oh, yeah. It's been coming down for hours.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. You've had more rain than I've got, though. But now it's raining pretty good out here, so we're all right. All right, bud. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
And
bye-bye.
All right, buddy. Bye. Lynn's Auto Brokerage, Lynn's Auto Brokerage, AZ.com. Lynn's Auto Brokerage, DesertRV.com. Good websites, easy to navigate. One's cars, one's RVs. You just heard from Brian Fuller, Mr. Test First, don't guess. Merle's Automotive. They've got 10 locations in Tucson. They got them scattered out all over the state. They got them in Morenci, got them in Sierra Vista, Globe, Casa Grande, and Green Valley. And they got the big warehouse over here about less than a quarter of a mile from Frontier Towing on South Dodge Boulevard. Foreign, domestic, and 18-wheelers. Parts, delivery service, equipment. They make hoses, any kind of hose that you're looking for to put ends on them or fix them, hydraulic hoses and stuff like that, you can get it done at Merle's. So, excellent shop. Been using them for years and years. Parker Automotive, AZ, ParkerAutoAZ.com, 520-323-1960, 5101 East Speedway in Tucson. That's a Midtown repair facility. It's homegrown. Excellent shop, has the big front end alignment equipment that you use for all your late model vehicle, like Brian Fuller does at Automotive Specialist, and like Simmons has on the at Aho and Country Club. And just excellent shops, both Automotive Specialist Parker Automotive in Simmons. You know, we've pretty much got different locations in Tucson for you. Either one of them will treat you like you're supposed to be treated and take care of you. All right. Now we're back, Jim. We've got just a couple of minutes left, it looks like. Let me see my watch. I got about 2.5 minutes.
Did you forget Lynn's Auto Brokerage?
No, I covered Lynn's Auto Brokerage a while ago, didn't I?
Lynn's?
Yeah.
Lynn's
I checked it off. Lynn's Auto Brokerage. Lynn's Auto Brokerage, AZ.com, and DesertRV.com. Yeah. Got them. You can go to the websites and check their inventories. They change every week. Perfect. Perfect. Then you got that one guy, Frontier Towing. I don't know about him, though.
I don't blame you there. Crazy guy.
Just talk to this guy. You know, I'll tell you one thing. I don't think you can tear up as many things and live to talk about it that Jim and I have. I mean, we've done run the gamut on blowing engines, but the thing is we've learned what not to do. Jackrabbit starts is miserable on cars.
You're exactly right. There's, you know, some stuff I've done, it just happens to be a luck of the draw, I guess. And some things, you know, just happens to be dumb luck. So, it is what it is, you know, but I'm still around to tell about it. So if I can help somebody not do those dumb things, then hey, that's good for us because, There's not a lot as you really want to do, and you know, you don't want that here. Hold my beer moment anymore.
No,
I don't want that. Here, watch this and hold my beer. You know, that'll be okay.
Yep.
Great.
All right, Jim. We got 30 seconds. Less than 30 seconds, right now, buddy. Thank you for coming on in this nice, beautiful day in Tucson, Arizona. And thank everybody for joining us this morning. I hope you picked up something. On maybe not the way to do it, but the way not to do it. Have a plan if you plan on working on a car. Until next week, God bless. Y'all take care. Have a safe weekend. Bye-bye.